I think I was pretty bad at guitar. I like to think that I was extremely cool. I went through a phase. I'd watched School of Rock for the first time and decided that I had a future as an electric guitar player. And I think this phase lasted about 2 weeks. And I was very cool for those 2 weeks and played Eye of the Tiger a lot.
Erstklassisch mit Mischke, der musikalische Podcast des Hamburger Abendblatts.
Schönen guten Tag zu einer neuen Folge. Ich habe heute einen ganz interessanten Gast dabei. Vor einigen Wochen in Köln wollten 13.000 Menschen in ihr Konzert im Kölner Dom. Die Schlange war ungefähr 1 Kilometer lang. In der Schule hat sie sich, soweit ich weiß, mal so vorgestellt: Hi, I'm Anna Lapwood and I play 20 instruments. Übrig geblieben ist vor allem eins, das deutlich mehr wiegt und mehr Lärm machen kann als alle 20 zusammen, die Orgel. Sie hat in der Royal Albert Hall für Benedict Cumberbatch georgelt und sie hat Tom Cruise gezeigt, wie impossible diese Mission ist. Am 22. Oktober ist sie wieder in Hamburg, dann in der Elbphilharmonie, aber jetzt ist sie, glaube ich, in London. Sie ist Britin und es ist Anna Lapwood. Also, hello and lovely to meet you.
Ah, I did understand a little bit of that, actually. I was
okay.
Very proud.
Okay. Wonderful. That's a good way to start. Und übrigens, falls Sie jetzt schon neugierig geworden sind, während diesem Podcast noch so alles da war und von sich berichtet hat, Sie finden Erstklassisch mit Mischke auf abendblatt.de und bei allen anderen guten Podcast-Adressen. Bewertungen von 5 Sternen aufwärts nehmen wir gern. Das freut uns und das hilft uns. Aber jetzt fangen wir erstmal an und wir machen auf Englisch dann weiter. So, first of all, thanks for having me, Anna. You've been busy for years now, so it's quite complicated to find a schedule, to find a hole in your schedule. So thanks.
Sorry.
I found an interesting quote. You said that, The Guardian wrote about you that by the age of 18, she had reached grade 8 standard on the piano, the violin, viola, harp, and organ, and taught herself a dozen other instruments. Which one's the one you played not good at all? What's the worst?
Oh, that is a very good question. I think I was pretty bad at guitar. I like to think that I was extremely cool. I went through a phase. I'd watched School of Rock for the first time and decided that I had a future as an electric guitar player. And I think this phase lasted about 2 weeks. And I was very cool for those 2 weeks and played Eye of the Tiger a lot. But I don't think that had a future for me. So I'm going to say, yeah, guitar was not my strong point.
Okay. An organ is not something you come across easily. They don't lie around in the living room. You don't meet an organ in school normally. How did you come across having the idea, I have to play the organ?
Well, my dad was a priest, so I grew up in churches a lot. And I obviously heard the organ played quite a lot. But interestingly, I don't remember kind of being struck by it as an instrument as a child. And I have been obviously thinking about this a lot now that I am an organist and wondering why I wasn't taken by it straight away, given that I did love sort of taking up as many instruments as I could. And I think it's something about the fact that I could never see the player. And so I didn't think of it as an instrument that I could do because I just sort of heard it. I never saw it. And it wasn't until I was a teenager and my mum turned around to me one day and said, "Have you ever thought of taking up the organ?" And I was like, "Don't be ridiculous, Mum. The organ's an awful instrument. Why would I ever want to take up the organ?" And then she told me that organ scholars at Oxford and Cambridge get grand pianos in their rooms at university. And I confessed that that was the reason I took up the organ in the first place, because I really wanted a grand piano. But then as I started playing, at first I found it really, really, really hard. And I hated it because I found it so hard. And then I started to fall in love with the whole world that the organ opens up. And it was how I got to know the world of choral music. And it was my sort of gateway into that. So now I'm quite grateful to my mum for encouraging me to take it up all those years ago.
Whenever you read an article over here, at least, there's always mentioning a quote that you're supposed to be the Taylor Swift of organists. Is this rather a blessing or a curse being compared in this way?
You know what? I love Taylor Swift and I have a lot of respect for her. I think she is an incredible artist and also incredible at creating a community around her music. And I am very inspired by her and try and take a lot of inspiration from her in how I approach creating a community myself. So I see that quote as a huge, huge honor. I do find it funny how that sort of quote seems to stick. Once someone says anything like that once, it follows you around for years. And I think it is this thing, media often loves to put people in boxes, doesn't it? And so I think that's another box. But you know what? I just am full of admiration for everything she's achieved with her music and the fact that people follow her musical journey and follow whatever music she decides to focus on in that particular season, because it's the music that feels authentic to her at that point in time. They are drawn because they follow her as a person. They then go on this musical journey with her and follow her changing preferences. And I think we can learn a lot about that in the classical world, that actually, if we bring an audience along with us on the journey, we can introduce them to all sorts of different musical discoveries along the way.
Is it possible that playing the organ is sort of helpful achieving a career like yours, because it's such a complicated instrument and nobody really knows how this is done, how this is working, what's possible, what's impossible on an organ? It's easier to find out whether somebody is a good piano player or a good violin player or a good singer, because that's rather obvious and popular. Organ is very exotic in a way. And I guess it might be easier to just get ahead and to just become famous more easily, because nobody knows whether this what you're doing is at the top of the level. It's just mediocre or it's just below mediocre. So how do you think about this?
Yeah, I think the exotic nature of the instrument has certainly been a big part of the appeal on social media, because a lot of people just don't understand how it works. And so I've sort of seen my part of my job as trying to explain to people how it works and trying to kind of demystify it a little bit and say, oh, yeah, this is how we use our feet. This is what we use our feet for. I know what you mean about how, because it's less famous, it's harder to know what is difficult, what's not difficult. But also, I think, as with any instrument, there can be this illusion of playing things with loads and loads and loads of fast notes is the hardest thing you do on the instrument. But actually, some of the hardest things we do on the organ, it's about playing something really, really slow, but creating that sense of musical line, because it's not like other instruments in terms of how you create emotion in the playing. It's the only way you can create emotion is by these tiny changes in articulation. And so actually, the things that sound hard, as with any instrument, the things that sound hard are often easier than the things that sound easy. And it's making everything sound easy that is one of the challenges.
The fun part is, on my side at least, is you're playing two instruments that I don't understand totally. I have no idea how you play a harp, and I have just vague ideas about how to play an organ. And it's so complicated, and you're playing both of them.
Yeah, you know, I always say I think my harp training really helped when it came to the organ, because as a harpist, you're using your feet a lot. So you're using the pedals to change the key in the case of the harp, but you have to get very good at your feet moving at the same time as your hands, but without you thinking about your feet. And there's an independence that has to develop between the hands and the feet as a harpist, which obviously then comes in very useful with the organ, when you have to just let your feet do their thing and trust that they know where they're going to go. And interestingly, I don't play the harp anymore, but I sat down and I still have my harp, and I played it for the first time in a couple of years, I think maybe a month ago, 2 months ago. And my hands had no idea what they were doing. My feet just shot to the right place straight away. And I couldn't remember this piece, but my feet remembered the pedals. And it was a very surreal thing, because there was no brain activity that I was aware of telling the feet where to go, but the muscle memory was still there.
You played an organ, or you, at least I know that you started playing the organ, and you played them while you're a teenager. And I guess there's two or three things that are slightly more cool than playing organ when you're teenage girl.
You know, not for me, because the coolest thing in my mind was playing musical instruments and spending my whole time, all my spare time, trying to figure out how to play more musical instruments. And it was my sort of safe place, I guess, as well. It was my refuge from the world. It was my most natural means of communication, or at least music more generally was my most natural means of communication. I am secretly an introvert. I might not seem it, but I am massively introverted. And there's something about music where it just feels like you can say whatever you want to say in the most authentic terms when words sometimes fail you. So yeah, that's how I just loved spending my time as a teenager. And it took a bit longer for me to feel that same emotional connection with the organ, I think. I felt like it took a while before I figured out how to communicate through the instrument, and longer than it had taken for the other instruments that I played. But now I sit at the organ and it just feels like an extension of my body.
Are you able to feel the audience like other musicians are able to do this because of the distance you have between yourself, the position you are, and the audience is more or less half a kilometer away if you're in a church. What's that like to play for people you can't see? Even if you look at them in your rear mirror, you can't see them. So it's just like being alone, but it's not like that. And I wonder what this feeling is on stage or during a concert.
It's an interesting question, actually. I mean, it varies a lot depending on the specific venue, because I mean, I've just been playing in Trondheim in Nidaros Cathedral. And there, the organ console is on the ground. I had kids sitting, I don't know, a meter behind me on the floor, and audience all around me. So I did feel much more kind of in the middle of things. But as you say, often we are hidden away. In Cologne Cathedral, I was up on this gallery and miles away from everyone. And I think there's something, I love the feeling of performing and feeling like I go into my own little world sometimes. And it can feel like it's just me and the instrument. And I kind of forget that the audience is there. And I quite like that, because for me, as I said, music is such a deeply personal thing. And it feels like a conversation between me and the instrument. And the way I play a piece will change based on how I'm feeling that day, because I'm trying to just put the current emotional state into that piece. And so sometimes forgetting about the audience can be quite a good way to achieve that kind of conversation. But then I also love trying to incorporate moments that very much remind me that the audience are there. So I often will say, in Cornfield Chase from Interstellar, I will ask the audience to get out their phone torches. And that is actually largely so that I am reminded that every phone torch represents a human being who is sitting there in the audience. Similarly, I always check the comments on social media before any concert and just check if there's anyone with a birthday or someone celebrating a big moment, or just some story to remind me of the people who are sitting in the room listening. Because the community that has developed around the organ and around my concerts in the last few years, that is very much my inspiration. That's why I make music. And being reminded of that just before you go on stage, and reminded of the human stories behind every single person sitting there, I think it makes it mean more for me for every concert, if that makes sense.
Sure. I found a quote you said once, if you're going to bring classical music to another audience, we've got to do it on their terms. And they are there, they are sitting there on social media the whole time. This is quite obvious and quite logical, but it's complicated nevertheless. What's your explanation for the situation that so many of your colleagues aren't working and aren't really interested in doing this and are still going on the stage and playing and doing nothing else? Isn't it vital to think about audience in a new way as well, to get them to get a full house and to get them to hear music which they might have never heard before?
I mean, I think everyone has a right to make music on their own terms and to engage with their audience in the way that feels most natural for them. I think The point I was trying to make with that quote is I feel as if we often say, oh, how do we get a young audience into classical music? They just don't care. And this is where I think that that is just totally wrong. They do care, but it's just finding the right way to get them, sort of get them hooked. And I think it can be a little arrogant of us to assume that they would want to just walk into a concert hall, to just assume that as a basic thing, to say, yeah, they don't seem to want to walk into a concert hall, they're wrong, this is awful. I think that's a little arrogant of us. Whereas actually, the thing that I have found is that just sharing what we do on the platform that all these young people are using the whole time, which they understand and which they use to encounter the world, if we make classical music something that they stumble across on that platform, then we're not having it as this other thing that they have to engage with in a totally different way. It's something that just feels part of their normal life to encounter. And what I have found is that putting that music in front of them on that platform, they start to ask questions about it. They want to know more, they want to learn, because that's what they use social media for. They use it to learn. And then they come to the concerts and they are there because of TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. Mostly with the younger generation, TikTok and Instagram. But they really do then come to the concerts and then they keep coming back. And that's what I find really exciting. So I find often perhaps colleagues will say, oh, well, she has loads of followers, but it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, it's just people online. That's not right. It does translate to people coming into the concert hall and then going to other concerts by other organists or going to other concerts in that same concert hall. And this is where I think we are living at such an exciting time, because we can use social media to get this new audience in and get them excited. And I feel like just trying to encourage anyone who's happy and willing to use it to just explore what might be possible with social media. And you don't have to play film scores. I play film scores because it's the music that makes me the most happy and where I feel I have the most to say. But I know plenty of other organists who are achieving huge success on social media playing the classic repertoire too, and that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. How complicated and how tough is it to resist the urge to not blast away on a big organ beast like the one in Royal Albert Hall, just doing everything you can and playing as loud as you can and playing so that, I don't know, books fall from shelves. And you have an organ. If you play organ, then you have so much physical power, more or less, under your hands. And I guess this must be really exciting and tempting to just let it all go and not play soft and not play quiet and not be nice and kind on an organ like this, where you feel your teeth shaking whenever you're doing a real forte.
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, yes, I love the feeling of playing when it really is shaking the walls, and you know that it is sort of audible from the offices as well as in the hall itself. It's an amazing feeling. But I've always loved the soft side of the organ almost more, I think. And I think the loud side wouldn't have the impact without the soft side, right? Some of my favourite playing to do is when you're playing so quietly that you can barely hear it, and having that as the contrast to that wall shaking thing. So actually, in the most recent concert I did in Trondheim, I was playing something from Inception, and it gets extremely loud. And then the next moment, it is the quietest you can possibly play. And in Trondheim, you can play with some pipes that are up in the tower, so they're even quieter because they're so far away. And it was so quiet that you really could, you had to strain to hear it. You were like, is the organ still playing? But the feeling of 1,000 people sitting in total silence and total focused concentration, all with their ear kind of to one side, trying to hear this very, very, very quiet sound. That is such a special thing. And I never get bored of it at all. Even if it's just me playing, I never get bored of that contrast and that range.
Mm-hmm. You're more or less 30 now, as far as I know. And you had a career, or you're having a career, which is really impressive. And you've ended jobs that many other had when they were quite a lot older than you are now. And you've been the youngest music director in an Oxbridge college. You even have an MBA since 2024, like a big order. And aren't you scared somehow that maybe all this comes too soon and it's not too easy to achieve all this? But I wonder whether there's some sort of fear about, oh, am I really that good? Am I really that good at that age? What's next? What can come next if I've achieved so far so many things already? How does this feel?
We all have that fear, I think. We all have that little voice inside that goes, "Oh, but I'm not good enough. I can't do it. Why? What is happening? It's all going to come crumbling down." And in a way, that's why I chose to leave my job in Cambridge when I did, because I have been spreading myself extremely thinly for the last few years, doing a full-time job and then sort of trying to do full-time touring on top of the full-time job. And I know that I've been pushing my body to its limits. I know that I haven't been really sleeping much for the last couple of years. And I know that every now and then I have felt like I haven't been able to do the music justice in the way I want. And I also feel like I have been on the verge of letting my students down on occasion because I have been too tired to notice when they need my support. And I made the choice that I wanted to stop spreading myself that thinly before either of those things fell apart, right? And I know that touring is a very intense thing on your body and on your brain. And I know I won't want to do touring for my entire life, but at the moment, it's something that I deeply enjoy and find incredibly rewarding. And I feel like my heart sings when I'm on stage in a way that I can't ignore. And so this is the time for me to try it and experiment and see where it takes me. I mean, it's sort of the start of a very new chapter for me. I've got 85 concerts in the next 12 months. So it's a huge number of concerts.
Slightly insane.
It's completely insane. But I'm really excited about it. And what I want to do is do this for 12 months, see how it feels, keep taking stock at every step. And keep having the conversation with my manager and with my team and say, what's feeling right? What's feeling less good? And just try and listen to what is making my heart sing. Because it's kind of a voyage of discovery for all of us. We're not quite sure what's going to happen. I want to make sure that whatever choices I make, it's choices that are sustainable, that hopefully allow me to have a long career if possible. But it's just an exciting time to kind of see what is coming next. And I'm just very grateful to the audiences who have kind of made it possible. I mean, most of my next shows, I think the next sort of 20 shows, most of them are sold out. Which is mad. I never thought that would have been a thing that I would be encountering as an organist. But it shows that the demand is there, and I find that the audiences are the ones who shape what I play, and they're the ones who inspire me the whole time. And I'm excited to have the chance to take that to the next level over the next couple of years, I guess.
Since you mentioned the word madness and touring and all this, the concert in Köln, where in Cologne, where 13,000 people came and you had to play extra concerts when you were in Hamburg a few days later, I was there. It was okay, sold out, but it wasn't that frenzy that you experienced in Cologne. Any idea how many T-shirts you sold afterwards? Because you had these T-shirts where the money from selling them went to an organization for supporting live music, so it's not go to you, but it went to this organization. Any idea how many T-shirts you've sold, and how crazy this is, more or less, being an organist and selling T-shirts after a concert that was so crowded that people stood in line for a kilometer?
I have no idea how many t-shirts we've sold because I haven't been keeping an eye on it. But it was I still can't believe that whole thing happened. And I knew it was going to be busy. I think they often have sold or sort of basically sold out concerts there. And I had sort of said to them in advance, I'd said, I'm just a little bit nervous about the fact that we aren't doing tickets for this. Is it worth us doing tickets? They said, there's no way it'll be more than 4,000. There's just absolutely no, it's fine, don't worry. And I kept saying, I'm just worried. Like, a lot of people seem to be saying they're coming online, but obviously it's really hard to tell based on online comments. It's hard to know who will actually come. And then in the days before the concert, I was sharing quite a lot of my practice sessions. And I mean, that organ is so inspiring. And I was just sort of saying, this is kind of the most inspired I felt in terms of the pairing of instrument and repertoire. And these videos started going viral and getting kind of 50,000 likes and loads of comments. And again, I said to the team, I was like, I'm seeing more and more comments from people flying from all over the world coming to this concert. And I'm a bit nervous. And we were still like, it won't be more than 4,000. And then it got to 2 hours before the concert and the queue was already a kilometer long. And I said, this is not going to work. We have to do two concerts because it's more than 4,000 people. They'll never all get in. So we did two concerts and I thought we'd got everyone in. I honestly thought that I didn't know that there was anyone else outside. Turns out there were still 5,000 people outside trying to get in. And by the time I knew, it was too late. But yeah, I mean, the police were involved because none of us were expecting it. And it was stressful. I'm very glad that nobody got hurt and that people were so kind of courteous to each other and looked after each other in the queue. And a lot of people said they turned up, realized they were never going to get in, and then just stayed for the experience of queuing and being there. And what a crazy thing, what an amazing thing, and what a privilege to kind of have been at the heart of it.
What about stage fright? Does it rise exponentially in this situation, or is it just the same whether you play for 200 or 4,000, or because you can't see them anyway? What's your situation when you're having to play in a frenzy like this?
I didn't feel an ounce of nerves on that occasion. It was really, I mean, we all have an interesting relationship with nerves, I think. I used to get really bad stage fright. And I think it's only since I've really felt like I found what I want to say with what music I want to play. That's when my stage fright went away, because it felt like I wasn't trying to prove anything anymore. I was just sharing what I loved. And certainly in the case of Cologne, I kind of thought I might get a little bit nervous, but it was just the most incredible energy. I mean, I shared a video of what it looked like from the gallery, and it looked like, you know, the scene in Lord of the Rings where Sauron goes out on the gallery and there's this army spread out in front of him. It looked like that from up there. It was just crazy because there were just people everywhere, and I knew it was going to look busy, but I had no sense that it was going to be that crazy. And they were just cheering and shouting and whooping, and it was honestly just the craziest thing to watch, and there was no way I could feel nervous in that moment, because I just felt so kind of touched that people were there, and particularly in the context of it coming just as I was leaving the job in Cambridge. And obviously there was a lot of swirling emotions in my brain about that decision, and that voice saying, oh, maybe you're making the wrong decision, maybe you're leaving the comfort of this job, maybe you're not good enough. And then to see that many people there for me to hear me play, it was such a nice moment of, yeah, maybe you've made the right choice.
Did you contact the Guinness Book afterwards, because you could be mentioned and entering this one with the category weirdest organ concert ever?
I did. You know what? It did make me think I want to try and get a Guinness World Record for the largest audience at an organ concert. I'm doing a concert at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City next year. And I was thinking we might try, because that venue can take that many people. And it is equipped to deal with that many people. So we might see if we can get a big audience. And it would be very cool, I think, to just show people that there are that many people who want to come to an organ concert.
And maybe you've even qualified for playing with Taylor Swift.
Oh, one day, maybe. That's on my bucket list. I'm not going to lie. I would love that.
What's more fun, playing on one of these organs that are as big as an aircraft carrier and just as loud, or playing on these antique tiny organs. If you're coming to Hamburg, which you're going to do in October, we have all these Baroque organs standing around here. What's more fun?
So for the repertoire that I play, it sort of needs to be one of the bigger organs, because the music that I adore playing is orchestral transcriptions, and you just need a larger instrument to play it. Not just the kind of the sounds, but also in terms of the compass, the number of notes on each keyboard, and the playing aids as well. You need, I hate having a page turner, and I hate having a registrant, because I like going into my little world with the organ. And so I do all my registrations myself, but that does mean you need the right buttons. So I now am quite strict about the organs that I say yes to. I think we turn down probably about 2/3 of the invitations we get, just because there isn't time to do everything. And so I basically choose the organs where I know that the music that I want to play is going to work. And that means that I don't play the smaller Baroque instruments anymore. And I do every now and then if I'm just practicing for fun, I love going and playing them and just playing through some Bach. But for the concerts that I'm giving and for the music that I know my audience wants to hear as well, it does need the bigger aircraft hangar style organs.
Okay. One thing I found interesting is that you've started a movement sort of with the hashtag Play Like a Girl. And you founded this Cambridge Organ Experience for Girls. How many girls did you actually bring to being interested in playing the organ or actually playing it? Is there a sort of rising success?
Yeah, so when we first started the Organ Experience, I was asked to set it up by the university, because they'd noticed that there were a sort of serious lack of female organ scholar applicants. And so they asked me to set it up. And the first year we did it, I think we had 20 girls coming. The last year we had 90. And I think the big difference that I noticed, other than the numbers, is that the first year, most of them didn't play the organ. And by the end, most of them did play the organ already and were there to share the experience with each other and get to play these different instruments. And I just find that so exciting. And it's interesting. Obviously, people can sort of say, isn't it creating more gender division to do that? And to that, I reply, well, when we get to a point where we have equality in terms of the number of female organists in the top positions compared to the number of male organists, then we don't have to have the conversation anymore. And my aim is to get to a point where we don't have to have that conversation anymore. I'm finally at the point where people don't refer to me as a female organist anymore, which feels like a huge win because I'm just an organist. They refer to me as the TikTok organist instead, but that's fine. But I'm not aiming to push this conversation just for the sake of having it. I'm aiming to make sure that everyone feels welcome in the organ world. And there are lots of us trying to just gently make sure that the numbers start to look more equal and that we are definitely getting there. We are definitely making progress. But I don't think we're quite there yet.
I guess I'm the first one to ask this, but what's it like having Tom Cruise on your organ bench or Benedict Cumberbatch on your organ bench? Other people would kill for that, at least.
Utterly surreal, I think, is the best way to describe it. I think in both cases, I was pinching myself a lot afterwards going, but did that really just happen? But, you know, it sort of reflects the more general thing I've been trying to do of just show people that the organ is such a cool instrument, and it's an instrument that people find incredibly exciting if they get to get up close and try it themselves. Because I think at the beginning of my career, I was told so often, nobody likes the organ. I mean, I kept trying to pitch ideas for radio shows and TV shows about the organ to show people how great it was. And I was met over and over again with this response, nobody likes the organ, sorry, it's not interesting. People won't find it exciting. And so to then be able to take people like Tom Cruise and Benedict Cumberbatch and say, hey, do you want to give it a go? And to see their excitement, I think it, number one, helps prove all those people wrong who said that no one likes it. But number two, it's kind of helping use their power and energy and be like, look, they like it, you might like it too. And yeah, I love getting anyone I can up close to give it a go at the Albert Hall. If there's a cleaner who wants to have a go, or if there's some of the crew who want to have a go, I will always try and give them a chance if it's in the middle of the night. And in those cases, it just happened to be Tom Cruise and Benedict Cumberbatch, which was quite fun.
Who is better at the organ? Which one of them?
Definitely Benedict Cumberbatch, I'm afraid. Sorry, Tom. Well, Tom, because I don't think Tom Cruise doesn't play the piano, whereas Benedict does. And so he played some Bach, actually.
He was okay doing this. He was.
Yeah, he did the C major, da 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 da.
Okay.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned the idea that nobody likes the organ, I used to study musicology and we had organ scientists who I studied, and they were slightly weird to say the least. So it's hard to come by the idea of organists being organists and just seeing that they're normal people. That's music as well, and that's a decent instrument. How tough is it even now for you to explain to people, even after all what happened to you and with your career, that this is something to be taken seriously and or to just have fun with as well?
Yeah, I think obviously organs are such complex machines and such extraordinary machines. And I think a lot of the narrative around the organ in the past, not all of it, but a lot of it, has been focused on the fact that they are extraordinary machines. And I think that is incredible and it is something to be celebrated, of course. But I also think there's a limit to how far people connect with that on a human level. And I think what I've found is that people connect with it more if they feel an emotional draw. And so I guess I've been exploring that a lot in the music that I play and seeing that film scores have this huge emotional draw to people, and they do for me as well. I have found that that is the music that allows me to create that emotional connection with audiences most easily. And then that provides a gateway into the other repertoire as well. And so, yeah, I think it's trying to kind of respect the fact that they're incredible machines, but then think, okay, but that's not enough to get an audience interested. People don't go to piano concerts because they think that the piano is an amazing work of art. They go to piano concerts because they want to be moved. And I think we can learn a lot from other instruments with the organ. And perhaps we need to work even harder than other instruments because it is an incredible machine, but it is, I think, harder to make it make music than many other instruments because of the binary on off of an organ key. You don't get the same degree of, like, if you're playing a harp, it feels like you can pour emotion into the music so much more quickly because it is so much more responsive. With an organ, you do have to work that little bit harder.
Since you're
Did that make
playing,
sense?
of course, yeah. Since you're doing soundtracks in your concert or film score stuff in your concerts, did you ever get in touch with a guy like Hans Zimmer or Portman or whatever to just tell them if you have an idea for an organ, just call me. I might be interested. Or did they contact
Yeah,
you?
I'm in touch with Hans, and we keep trying to work together, and then the dates never work. But we are still hoping to work together one day. And Rachel Portman, I've had many conversations with her. She actually plays the organ herself. John Powell, I was lucky enough to meet as well. And with all these people, I keep trying to say to them, maybe you should write a soundtrack which is just the organ, to show people quite how versatile this instrument is. And no one's done it yet, but I hope that someone might, because I think it could be quite a cool way to demonstrate the sheer range of the instrument, to have a soundtrack that is entirely the organ, particularly if it's one of those big organs in America that has percussion instruments in, and it really has everything you could possibly want in terms of sounds. But yeah, I mean, I just think someone like Hans in particular has done so much for the organ by writing that soundtrack, the Interstellar soundtrack, showcasing the instrument. I think that has been one of the greatest advancements in interest in the organ. Everyone wants to hear the Interstellar soundtrack whenever I turn up anywhere, even if they have no idea who I am, they want to hear Interstellar. And I think that's something to be celebrated. I know that some people can roll their eyes and say, oh, it's basic. People who want Interstellar, it's basic. Like that, I think that is number one, wrong. Number two, reductive. And number three, insulting to the people who really love that music and who find that it moves them. It moves me whenever I play it. And so, yeah, I just am very grateful to people like him for thinking of the organ.
Do you have a sort of organ bucket list, organs you absolutely want to play in your life? Like, I don't know, maybe the new one, or it's the quite new one in Paris, Notre Dame, or whatever other organs that every organist in the world wants to get their hands on, and it's really tricky to get in there.
Yeah, I did. I had a long bucket list, and I feel very lucky that I've now ticked off most of the ones on the bucket list, which is exciting. I mean, Boardwalk Hall, with the largest in the world, that was the top of the list for a while, and now I've got to play there, and that was incredible. Disney Hall, again, I get to go and play there this year, later this year, for the second time. I think the other ones on there's the new organ in Helsinki, which is the 3D printed organ pipes, and it looks and sounds incredible. So I'd love to play there. The Mormon Tabernacle organ, that is vast and has so many cool colours. So I'd love to go and play that one. But there are just so many exciting instruments out there. This is the thing. You can write a bucket list, and then you could write a whole other bucket list that is just as exciting. And I guess that's why I feel so lucky at the moment that I'm basically just ticking off my bucket list as my job, and realizing how all of the music that you play can take on totally different meaning on all these different instruments. So you can play the same piece on 10 different instruments and it sounds totally different every time. And so a lot of my audience now, they want to tick off every concert because they want to hear how the pieces sound different in different places. And I think that's quite cool.
I wonder whether organ playing might not be the only slightly weird thing in your life that you're doing, because I've seen a video online, you at the edge of Victoria Falls, which is
Yes.
not as bad as it looks, but it's interesting. And even more, I've been there as well, not on where you
Yeah.
live, but I've done rafting at the Zambezi River,
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah, yeah,
I hadn't the guts. I didn't have the guts to go up
yeah.
there. Aren't
You
you being
have to do it.
No, thank you.
No, I really mean it. It's not scary, and it is just I do I work in Zambia every year teaching music, and it's sort of like I always think of it a bit like my new year because it happens at the beginning of the academic year every time. And obviously, that's sort of been the structure of my life for quite a long time. And at the end of this trip, every single time, I will go and swim on the edge of the waterfall. And it feels a bit like a baptism each time. It's like a fresh, clean slate after I've done that swim. And it's just this reminder of how small we are in the context of the universe. And yeah, I don't know, it feels like this reset every time. And particularly in the context of just having been teaching music and being reminded how ridiculously lucky we are to have careers as musicians. I mean, there are so many musicians I work with in Zambia who are just as talented as musicians I know here in the UK who have careers. And in Zambia, it's not yet a career path that's viable to be a musician. So all of these people are doing it for fun, but working other jobs alongside and being reminded of the fact that we cannot take it for granted that music is a viable career path. I think it's a really important thing. And so the waterfall is kind of, yeah, the symbol of that at the end of those trips every year.
Because to me, it looked like this is some sort of antidote against all the weird things you're doing all year long, and playing and practicing and being reasonable. And in contrast to that, you just stand on the edge, or you're swimming at the edge of a waterfall in Africa just to see what else is possible in your life.
Yeah, and I also think it's the time each year where I'm very strict about taking at least a couple of days as a proper holiday as well, because I think so often as a musician, it's really tricky taking holiday, because if you do take a holiday, you feel a little bit guilty about not practicing. And when I say a little bit guilty, it tends to be very, very guilty about not practicing. But when I'm in Zambia, at the end of the trip, I will always take a few days and just do nothing. And then swim on the edge of the waterfall. And it's somehow it's easier. It feels a little bit easier doing that in that amazing place with the landscape around you. And yeah, it is very much an antidote to everything else going on, I guess.
Fünf Fragen, fünf Antworten. Kurz und knapp und gar nicht einfach.
Now I have some really tough questions, if it's okay for that.
Yeah.
Short ones, shorties. What are the things you spend an enormous and completely unreasonable amount of money for?
Oh.
Apart from saving for an organ, maybe. I have no idea.
Yeah. You know, the one that really that I find ridiculous every time is visa fees. The fees to get a bloomin' visa to the United States, it's so expensive. So that's always something that annoys me. And then, yes, the cost of a practice organ is not insubstantial. Yeah, I guess. And then sheet music, I guess, is also quite expensive. Oh, organ shoes. They are weirdly expensive, and you get through them quite fast, actually. It's a bit like a ballerina. The more you use them, the more they die. And so I always try and have a couple of pairs of organ shoes, but you do get through them quite fast.
That's even like you've just been looking at my papers, because the first organ player I talked to in this format was Iveta Apkallner.
Yeah,
She mentioned that organists have a weird taste when it comes to shoes.
Yeah, so there are shoes called Organ Masters, and they have a heel that's sort of perfectly designed so that you can rock between your toe and your heel easily on the keys. And they also have suede soles so that you can slip between them easily. And I always say to young organists, they will feel weird when you first wear them, but then once you get used to them, you will never look back. And now, I mean, if I didn't have my organ shoes, I would probably say I couldn't do a concert. Like, if my shoes got lost, they are that essential. They protect your feet as well. Sometimes you're having to hit buttons really quite hard and very, very fast. And without the shoe, every now and then I've done it without shoes and it's really painful. So it protects your feet and protects the muscles. So, yeah, we do have weird taste in shoes. I have some gold ones at the moment, which I rather love.
Is there something you couldn't care less for in your life?
The opinions of some other organists. I think people, I mean, I would say most days I will accidentally see someone being rude about me online, and it is often other organists, and it used to really bother me. I think it's still, I try not to let it get under my skin. Sometimes it does, but also, yeah, I would say I now try not to care less, because I think we all do our own thing, and we all, as musicians, we can only do what feels most authentic to us, and that's what I'm doing at the moment. And some people will like it and some people will not like it. And you have to be okay with that, because you're not doing it for other people. You're doing it for what feels authentic to you and what feels right for your audience. So yeah, that's my
okay.
Answer.
Good advice you'd give to your 20-year-old self, which is not too far away now, but anything that would have been really helpful when you were 20.
I guess linked to that, my answer for the last one, stop trying to please everyone. Because I think you tie yourself in knots as a musician if you're trying to please everyone and you're not being authentic. And I sort of wish I'd had that realization a little bit earlier, because I think I spent many years tying myself in knots and hating performing as a result. And the other advice that I always pass on, which I actually picked up from a singing teacher, he was talking about pupil who was struggling with performance anxiety. And he said, they just need to realize that they have to learn to be happy with their 60% and make sure their 60% is good enough. And that was the biggest light bulb moment for me. And I apply it in every concert now. And since I started applying it, I would say I very rarely feel like I give a concert that's not 90% or above. But I'm no longer expecting it to be 100% the whole time. And I'm learning to be sympathetic to the fact that I'm a human being and that sometimes you have a headache or whatever it is, and you might just not give 100%, or rather you are giving 100%, but 100% might not come out the other side. And the moment you realize that as a performer, it's quite liberating. And I think your percentages are higher across the board when you start to be kinder to yourself and when you start to not expect it to be perfect.
Mm. Your favorite instrument and the organ doesn't count. In your case, it's quite complicated, but is there anything?
My favorite instrument that isn't the organ.
Yes. So you have a wide range to pick from.
I would say either the harp, for obvious reasons, or the cello. I've always wanted to play the cello. I said if there was any other instrument I would take up, it would be the cello. I just think it is such a soulful instrument. And yeah, I love listening to it be played.
Okay. Any ideas what you've done or what you had done with your first professionally earned money? Did you...
No, because I first earned money when I was a child, because I used to do... I did stage school and I did a film when I was a child. It was an educational film to teach people English. Oh. And I think I earned something like £300. And I have no idea what I did with it. I have a feeling it got put in a savings account till I was 18. So that's probably, I think I was very responsible and saved it.
Beer or champagne?
Oh, definitely champagne. I hate beer.
What's the most typical thing for an organ player, for an organist, apart from wearing weird shoes? How could I always really recognize easily that you can't be anything else but an organist?
I think we all carry around tote bags, because I think we all carry around a tote bag with our organ shoes and with probably some Bach. So if you see someone with a tote bag, they're probably an organist. Not necessarily, but often.
Your favorite superpower you'd like to have?
Time travel.
Mm-hmm. And the most impossible thing on your bucket list, you'd wish that it would come true eventually?
Playing the organ with Taylor Swift.
Maybe she's not big enough for you in a while and you could pick them up.
I would love to play with her. I do. I know you joked about it earlier on, but I think it would be so cool. And yeah, we'll see. I'll keep trying.
Okay. Thank you very much, then. I've learned a lot and I'm really looking forward to being and listening to your concert here in October in Elbphilharmonie. And maybe I know it's sold out. Maybe there's a long queue in front of Elbphilharmonie, and who knows what's going to happen. But nevertheless, stay away from waterfalls. And we'll see here. Thank you very much, then.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for the brilliant questions as well.
Ein Podcast von Funke.
Weitere Podcasts vom Hamburger Abendblatt finden Sie in unserer Abendblatt-Podcast-App und auf abendblatt.de/podcast.